Please listen carefully.
And now, live from the kitchen table in McKinney, Texas, it's the Assuming Positions Podcast, featuring two guys cooking up some fresh hot takes, Kevin and Mikey.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Assuming Positions Podcast. Kevin over here.
And Mikey over here.
And today on the podcast, it has come. It is time for the bombs to drop and us to talk about the Fallout TV series on Amazon.
Woo! Hold on. I got to put my thumb up. Yeah. Oh, crap. It's not the right size.
You guys have heard us talk about it. We were excited about it. And you've had 2 weeks to watch it. And we're going to spoil everything because we want to talk about it.
Yeah, we talked to Evil Ted, who had a hand in helping bring this to creation.
Yep.
And we've been hyped since we talked about it on Nerd Alerts so long ago.
Yes.
Like last year when it first, we saw the Super Duper Mart like set picks.
Yeah.
And the armor, and there's like, here's what's coming. And now we got to see it in action and moving.
Yeah.
Amazing.
This was one of the, I think I might have said it on Nerd Alerts, I don't 100% like record, write down everything I say on this podcast.
Oh, yeah, no. It's a grab bag.
I don't think we have anyone who does.
But to be honest, I try to write everything down that you guys say. Sometimes it's hard. Y'all mumble and
yeah.
Sometimes the things y'all say just don't make no sense.
It's true. We do say a lot of things, crazy stuff off the dome, and you know, it happens. That's the fun of conversation.
Thanks, Scott. From the producer's booth. Just basically saying what you say is not worthwhile to transcript.
No, it's not worthwhile. Kevin, have you ever tried to write down everything you say?
Yeah, no, I told you I forget what I say. But
hard. But however, I am working on a conglomeration of pizza ratings, like all-time list.
Oh, awesome.
That's going to be the craziest list ever because that goes all process. Over the place.
Yeah. But either way, I'm going to say it now. We have talked long and not really hard, but we've talked often about how video games adaptations tend to be such failures unless they are totally so much different that it takes on a life of its own.
Yes.
Kevin, give an example of a movie that that does that.
Well, one of the things we've talked about is Resident Evil. Resident Evil was a video game, and the movies kind of became their own thing.
That's it, yeah.
And had popularity in their own way, kind of independently of the video game.
I'm with you.
But generally, you get stuff like the Super Mario Brothers movie from the 90s or late 80s.
The Street Fighter movie of the same caliber.
Yeah, it's just been known to just be terrible adaptations. And I think one of the first ones that anyone thought was any good was Last of Us.
Yeah.
But I would even argue that Last of Us, as popular as it is with gamers, it's not the most popular video game. It doesn't hold the same weight that a Fallout does. I put Fallout out there as far as like video game popularity with your Grand Theft Autos and
yep.
things that even I think people who aren't gamers like have heard of or might even know about.
Going beyond AAA into quadruple A.
I would say so, because Last of Us, a lot of people might have no clue, but you show someone who is only kind of around American pop culture, you show them the little thumbs up Vault Boy guy, and they'll be like, oh, I've seen that before.
Yeah, it's Abdow's Big Boy. I mean, no, it's Pip Boy.
Yeah, but I think Fallout is kind of goes beyond some of the other ones with who likes it and who knows it.
Yeah.
And Fallout to me is one of my favorite video games of all time.
Yeah, what's your history going back on just the property?
I've played 2, 3. I dabbled a little bit in one of the ports of 1.
Gotcha.
Back, but I didn't play 1 or 4. I know it's like a crazy top-down-y one.
And,
but I've really, the ones I've dug into are 2, 3, 4. New Vegas, and a lot of 76.
I got you.
So I'm a big-time Fallout fan. I have merch. I have little pop figures. And
you have Nuka-Cola products?
Nuka-Cola products. I have a lot of Nuka-Cola Girl posters at my
house.
Probably
some caps stashed somewhere.
I do. I have a couple of caps.
So, okay. So you are familiar with Fallout going into the show, obviously.
Very much so.
Yeah.
I was a huge fan, which scares me because Hollywood has a history of ruining things.
Scotty, do you have any history with Fallout?
Absolutely none at all.
Zero. Okay. I'm
certainly aware of it. I'm aware just as a pop culture thing, but have absolutely no frame of reference before I started watching this TV show.
Oh, it's interesting. Okay. Because I'm kind of with Kevin. Like, I have dabbled in not all of them and not all of them to completion, but I've played enough Fallout that I could have a conversation with people about Fallout, you know, and get into some of the lore and the crunchiness and be like, yeah, Fallout's so rad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Just trying to establish a baseline for where we're all coming into the show, because I do think, well, we can get into it, but I do think the knowing the game helps tremendously, but I'm not sure how much so.
Yeah, well, I mean, we'll figure it out. So let's get into just a little bit of background for what happened with this show and who's in charge of it. What's really interesting about this one is that Bethesda Game Studios, who makes the Fallout games, is very involved in this. They just haven't sold their property. They're part of the production, and they have one of the producers, Todd Howard, who's the Bethesda Game Studios producer.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's there on the scene.
He's like their George Lucas almost.
Yeah, and he's working with Jonathan Nolan, Christopher Nolan's brother.
I knew that name.
Who has worked on Batman. He's worked on these big, huge properties and adaptations before. And they're kind of the two big heads, the double-headed monster.
It was very cool to see the Bethesda logo actually like front and center up front, like right from the stylized TV. It's like, okay, this is the people behind it. So there should be some love and attention here.
Is Bethesda the only studio that's worked on the Fallout games?
Yes, I believe so.
Uh-huh. Okay, because I thought there was another developer that did like 2 and 4 or something like that.
It has been like the Bethesda came up with the property and the first 3, I believe. And then they've like at some point they branched out and did like a mobile Fallout, and they licensed Fallout stuff. So they opened up the Fallout property, and I think other companies got in on that. But as far as I know, Bethesda is sort of still the main front runner in it. But seeing that logo up front and center means, yeah, just knowing that the people that are involved in it are behind it, that's always such a heartwarming nerd thing.
And they're so involved in and behind it that this show is actually part of canon, and they made sure that it falls into canon with all of the games. And it actually takes place after all of the games. And it's almost like they treated it as if this is the story of a new game, which I find to be absolutely brilliant.
That's what we've said. Like, when we talk about video game medias and ways they've sort of fallen short is like, you know, either trying to tell the story that everybody already knows so you see the hits coming, or it's a character that you're trying to put an everyman in that doesn't really fit, you know? But this, I think just the fact that we get so many stories in one is so amazing. And that's so perfect to how the Fallout video game functions that it's seeing it in the flesh. It's amazing.
Also, who's in this? Well, one of the things we like to talk about on the pod a lot, one of the hills I like to stand on and die on top of is, hey, cigar chomping executive, you don't need to grab the big names for your property. Just get the best actors.
That's it.
For it. All these actors that are in this, you may have seen them before. You may recognize the face. You may recognize the name. You may not recognize both of them together. But I'll tell you right now, there's not a Kevin Hart in here. There's not a Jack Black in here. Am I talking about something else? Oh, wait a minute.
Yep.
It is a whole bunch of really good actors who some of them are great character actors that you've seen lots of places. But there's no huge marquee name that's really going to draw anyone to this show. It's Fallout is the marquee. I think, that the draw is.
The world, and here's this entire world that gamers know about that the world is maybe not prepared for. But so who's the standout in the cast for you? I'm going to bring this to the table. Because there are so many stories, like I just said, we get so many characters and so many people to sort of bond with that you really can just pick one and go with it.
Well, I mean, the way they've done this is brilliant. They have basically three protagonists.
Yep.
And each of them is kind of an alignment archetype. You've got your good, your neutral, and your evil. You're dealing with Lucy, the vault dweller from Vault 33.
Mm-hmm.
She's definitely the good. She's idealistic. She
has to be. Her eyes are so big. She has the biggest eyes I've ever seen on a human being. I've never seen eyes that big.
She finds the good in everything. You're right about that. And then Maximus, who's a squire of the Brotherhood of Steel, he's the neutral. He's very not sure which way he's going to go, but he leans good sometimes. He leans evil sometimes. He's a very dynamic character. I enjoy him a lot.
Which famous actor does he look like, though? Because I couldn't quite place it.
He looks like a cross between Denzel Washington and
Cuba Gooding Jr.?
Cuba Gooding Jr.?
Yeah, that's what I see.
I guess so. I was thinking maybe Morgan Freeman and Denzel Washington.
There you go.
From Glory morphed together.
Did you get any facial recognition in Maximus? You didn't. I thought it was somebody's actor son. I couldn't place it.
Yeah. Everybody in this, to me, they look like somebody, but they're not that somebody. I kept happening. I kept going like, that's this person. For the long time, Mikey and I thought Betty was Uhura from Star Trek, and then we realized that Uhura is way too old. If she's even alive, is she still alive?
I hope so. Yeah, I hope Uhura is still alive. But yeah, for the first couple times she showed up, I was and there's an NPC in here that I was convinced was Steve Zahn, but it's not Steve Zahn.
Yeah, see?
But a lot of good people.
Now, one face I did know, just recognize, and probably a great character actor who's recognizable to me is the ghoul / Cooper Howard, played by the great Walton Goggins.
Coop? Yep.
The great Walt Goggins.
Yes.
Absolutely. Forever, now not forever, I think this breaks his curse, but for the longest time, Goggins was the, hey, it's that guy. And you couldn't pull his name, because to be fair, Walton Goggins isn't the most tongue-rollable name, but he is one of those, I love that guy.
Yeah.
And now I hope he's getting his dues and his name, because he's killing it.
And that's definitely the evil character.
It could be.
Yeah.
It's interesting in the only 8 episodes that we got how you could argue either way.
For sure. But I'm just saying from the jump,
absolutely.
I think all these characters are being affected by the other characters and being drawn off sides in one way or the other. But just at the jump, at the very beginning with you start off with good, evil, and neutral.
You're just saying he's a bad guy because he's missing his nose. Although I will say here, we're a long way away from Red Skull and Hugo Weaving, you know? And I thought Red Skull looked great back when it happened, but to actually get full episodes with the ghoul, with Goggins, without a nose and not have it be distracting.
Yeah.
Other than just, that's a person without their nose.
Yeah.
You know, it just the caliber of the show.
I, for one, just that whole effect, because it was a combination of makeup and digital effects.
Mm-hmm.
There are times when you look at his nose and there's like a real depth, that's a hole.
Yeah.
That goes way deep into his face.
Yeah.
I would just say, coming to it from the outside, generally speaking, it does its storytelling or its world building really fast.
Yeah.
In a very efficient and really entertaining way.
That's nice to hear, because I'm coming into it knowing so much of the lore and so much of what's going on and understanding the technology and understanding the whole deal with this show is what is called in our nerd world, this is called atomic punk. or Adam Punk.
Yeah.
Much like how steampunk is, steampunk is sci-fi, but everything looks Victorian.
Mm-hmm.
This is sci-fi, but everything looks like it's the 50s or the American 50s. And it translates the exact same way. This isn't set in the 50s. This is set in like 2077 is when the bombs fall.
Mm-hmm.
So it's even the future of now.
Dystopian future.
But it's a total alternate universe. It's an alternate universe, just like with the steampunk. Steam became the thing, and that is used in every way. And you even got steam-powered robots and all that kind of stuff. This is where the atomic age and atomic technology was never feared and kept getting developed to the point where now we have, if you think of how, you know, computers used to be room size and now we carry them around in our pockets.
There you go.
It's the same thing where
you can carry around fusion in your pocket.
Yeah, you can
now
carry around fusion in your pocket. That's what the technology is. All the cars are atomic, and that's why there's no cars really running around in this world. I have to give them props for this, is that one thing about Fallout is you got to walk. In that game, you got to walk. There's no vehicles other than like the Brotherhood gyrocopter things. You have to walk, and because all of the vehicles have been EMP'd,
mm-hmm.
so they can't go. And they don't run on gas. They run on atomic power. That obviously there's some computer stuff going on in there. So you can't just get them restarted. So you don't have any Mad Max vehicle yeah. stuff going on. And it would have been really easy for them, or just, I don't know, tempting, I think, as creators to just want a Mad Max up with the crazy vehicles. But no, everyone's walking.
That's true.
And that's so honoring the games, because one of the things I love and hate about the games is that you got to walk everywhere, especially where every once in a while you'll see like a bicycle leaning up against the building and you're like, why can't I just get on that bike and ride it? That bike didn't get EMP'd, you know, but nope, you got to walk.
Because it follows the logic of this entirely well-built world yeah. that has existed for years
right.
in our life and in the Fallout universe. Mm-hmm.
Why couldn't they make new ones?
New cars?
Yeah.
All of the intelligent people were in the vaults, basically. Everyone else got nuked.
Yeah.
And well,
all the surviving tech right now is like the robots that we see in the show are robots that have been sort of set up right when the vault technology were coming.
They're like 200-year-old robots. And then the Brotherhood is the ones who are holding up technology, going find technology, figuring out how it works. They don't even know how it works. Their vehicles work because they're military vehicles that were shielded against EMPs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's why their vehicles work. See, I know all this stuff just going into it from playing the game, because the game is so in-depth. And if you go into the game and you read all the little, because you'll find just all kinds of little sidetrack stories and like computer like emails and stuff, and you just read through them and there's all this lore in there, and you learn about everything that's going on. And I completed 3, 4. I've completed them 100%, both of those two.
There you go.
So it's ridiculous. I'm a crazy Fallout head.
And like, it's all you knowing that, you and me knowing some of that, you geek out about it, seeing it in the show, because they aren't, like Scotty said, they aren't really explaining it. This is Tarantino. You're getting thrown into it, right?
Right.
You're getting sort of, here's three characters. Figure out which one you're going to bond with, you know?
Yeah.
And then we're going to learn about the world through three different perspectives, you know?
Yeah.
And see where they collide with. But, like, I love that the car thing is true because of the fusion and the history is all there. But also, like, it's also, there's video game logic that they're adhering to mm-hmm. as well. And that's so fun. Like, fusion is there, and we see the fusion cores, and that becomes like a MacGuffin for some characters.
Yep.
Great. That's a MacGuffin in the game. You know, that's the side quest. But also, like, they're opening up stim packs and injecting themselves and getting better like you would in a video game.
Exactly.
And they're setting that up, that this is how this world operates.
It is.
It's amazing. Like, yes, this is real life, and the history is accurate, and there's bad guys and a little bit of alternate history if you're nerdy and you want to go find those journals.
Yeah.
Or you can also just say, hey, this is a video game, and characters heal, and right. people may not be dead.
Land so I can go kill something.
Yeah.
I'm bored. Let me go shoot something. Yeah. That's exactly what a gamer do. It's like, oh, I don't want to do the main quest right now. I want to go just blow stuff
yeah.
up.
Yeah. They very much honor the rules of Fallout.
Absolutely.
They say, these are the rules of the universe. We're going to honor those rules the whole way through. I mean, the limbs exploding, the heads exploding, that all happens in the game.
I got you.
That messy finishers and all that kind of stuff, that's in the game. One thing that happens through this, before we get into the story and talk about the characters, and this is overarching things, one thing they do in this, which I think is partly bold, but also is honoring the video game, is that during the combat and action scenes, everything goes to slow-mo.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Now, there have been some people, Michael Bay, who are accused of making stuff go fast and having the camera jitter all around so you don't have to work as hard on the special effects or the action because people are too overwhelmed by all the flashiness that's happening. But doing combat in slow-mo is bold,
especially
when you have like practical effect power armor and stuff like that happening. But part of the reason they do it is because in the game, when it has a mechanic that when you're targeting, it goes in slow-mo. When you're targeting limbs and such, it literally goes in slow-mo.
Just how it does,
yeah.
Bringing the video game into the show.
So they brought the video game into the show because so it's crazy.
I'm also just going to say, you said practical effects, but that's also the reason you got to let those shine because our boy Evil Ted helped out. So every time we saw practical effects in nice slow-mo, we got to point at the screen and go, Evil Ted! Got to shout him out every time we saw a cool gun. All the weapons are here.
Yeah. Well, that roach. We know he did the roach.
And we see it in the first episode. And we were like, Evil Ted. But it's the practical effects. Absolutely.
One of the great things about practical effects is that Nolan said that they used a trick that they've used over the years with like Aliens and Predator and things like that. Where
our favorites.
If you have like the power armor, it makes you bigger than you are. You like get up into it.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's hard to do with practical effects because you end up with someone on like stilts and it looks kind of janky.
Makes sense.
What they do in Predator, what they do in Aliens is they would just find a really tall, skinny, like 7 foot something former basketball player actor to be in it. And he said that's exactly what they do with the power armor. He said everyone in the power armor is an oversized person.
They found that many of them?
So, I mean, there's only 5, I think. But
I guess that's true.
You can easily find just get a basketball team. Isn't there 5 players on a team out there at once?
Yeah. I think they did that for some other old movie where they had to get 5 big people.
So, literally, it's just...
There are 5 people that play basketball.
Yeah. It's just 5 really tall, skinny guys that they build the armor around. And then, you know, when someone gets out of it, then they're regular size. So, you think that... It makes them bigger.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
I'm going to have fun rewatching it and picturing who's actually under the armor. Which athlete is it now?
But it makes sense because if you're walking around on stilts and stuff, you have that really clompy walk.
Mm-hmm.
But when you see them walking, you know, it's very smooth, which is what it looks like in the game.
And it should be because it's, you know, it's still the tech that's being maintained and it's the elite soldiers. But speaking of bringing the video game into the real life aspect of it, and speaking of the slow-mo you're talking about, so Fallout, you're playing a game that's in the dystopian future, so you kind of forget about it, but Fallout is super gory.
Yeah.
This show, I don't think anybody was really aware, but this show is super gory.
It is.
Amazon did The Boys. That was one of their big highlights, also super gory, so... It's not that Fallout presents it in a blasé way, because it's a very Fallout way to be like, this is happening. This is how the world is, you know. Your reaction to it is up to you. But this show is like, there's going to be some blood and guts and missing feet and limbs and there's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, just like the game, though.
Exactly, but it took me a moment to recalibrate that, because I was like, Fallout's fun, and it's at the future, and there's crazy rednecks, and you'll know. People actually lose heads and limbs, and you can target heads and limbs.
Yeah. Scott, I kind of want to know what your perspective on that was, because, like, my wife doesn't play video games at all other than, like, Miss Pac-Man, and I showed her the first episode, and she was kind of tapped out on the fact that she's like, it's like someone mixed Quentin Tarantino and Star Wars, which I found as a great compliment, but she was like... it was fine. So I just didn't press it anymore. So I don't think she's going to watch any more of it. What did you think as someone who never played the game and had these video game aspects in it? Could you feel that it was video game stuff or?
Yeah, absolutely. I could definitely pick out some of the video gamey moments. The stim pack thing definitely kind of resonated as a oh, here's a health pack.
Yeah.
The again, oftentimes I think about, was this part of the video game? The same thing I had during Last of Us.
Mm-hmm. Well,
this part of the game or is that part of the game? But I have to admit, I really enjoyed the aesthetic. It's really, really, I guess, yeah, what did you call it?
It's Atomic Punk or Atom Punk. I don't know if there's been a consensus on what to call it.
I really dug it. It made it really interesting to watch, really fun to look for details. Mm-hmm. I find myself wondering around, oh, is that a, wonder if that thing is that an Easter egg of some sort?
Yeah, there are so much.
Wait, who's the broad that's running the Miss June?
Ma June's place, yeah.
Ma June. She was a total random encounter.
That was the place you go to get equipment and buy and sell stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there was so much stuff in there that was like in the game. It looked just like a shop from the game.
But Ma June was it's the first time the audience gets a sense of a surface dweller. She's the lady that's the surface dweller that's like, oh, you're a vaulty. Like,
yeah,
you're a fresh little bird that hasn't experienced the world.
Yeah.
And that's like, you learn that, like that's a character you would learn that information from in the game.
Right.
And now you're learning it as the audience.
Right.
And you're like, oh, that, I mean, it's wonderfully how it clicks so easily.
Yeah, there was so much. There was so much in there between all the equipment she had. There was tons of Easter eggs in there. There was a lunchbox in there, which in Fallout 76 is like you earn lunchboxes and you can open them up and they do special effects. You know, and Ma June's the one who gives her a waypoint in her Pip-Boy. She gets a freaking waypoint on her map to follow, just like the game. I was flipping out.
And Scotty, you can tell me if you're yay or nay on this, thumbs up, thumbs down. But like, for all those things that are like, oh, that's just like the game, it works in the show. Like, I was looking for it because I'm a game fan, but nothing was ever like, oh, they brought that in from the game. It doesn't really work, you know?
Right. It was only stuff that served the narrative, which was brilliant to me. And then everything also paid off. Like, I was kind of primed a little bit to be like, oh, man.
Here we go.
You better. Like, there's two things. There's two things that paid off for me in this as a gamer. First, when she has to drink the dirty water,
yep,
and the radiation thing on her Pip-Boy is going off, just like in the game,
yep.
And I'm like, oh, she's going to get rad sickness. And I was like, she better get rad sickness. She's gonna. And then next thing you know, when she encounters Maximus, she's like throwing up. And he's like, oh, you got rad sickness. And I'm like, well, there's only one way to help rats. He's like, I got some Radaway in my suit. And I'm like, yes, Radaway. That's how you get rid of rat sickness in the game, Radaway.
And it's just a casual reference to it.
Yeah, because it that paid off. I was like, yes. And then with Maximus, the thing that paid off was Thaddeus like takes his fusion core out, and I was like, I hope they address that you need a fusion core to run that power armor because in the game if you find power armor, it doesn't have a fusion core in it, so you can't go anywhere with it. You can't use the thing. So you have to run around and find a fusion core. And when you find a fusion core, you're like, did I put a waypoint where that armor was? And then you run back to the armor and jam the fusion core in it so you can run around in armor. And it's like, that, when he pulled that fusion core, I was like, yes, fusion core.
and then the thing from the game.
That the chick fixed for 5 caps.
So, oh, nope. I don't know what that was. That was just like a, I don't know, that was a piece of thing.
A piece of part. But yeah, that's fun because like the hilarious beat of her fixing it in 5 seconds for 5 caps, you know.
He sold his teeth,
which you can do in the game. But like caps is the currency, but they barely explain that. And you don't know what the, like how much is a cap worth? And bottle caps, really? And
like, yeah, they don't ever. And I want you to tell us again, Sky. It's wonderful that you never played the game. I think, like, I couldn't see it because I played the game so much. But we have talked about it before, the show-not-tell thing. And,
right.
And oftentimes these creators will fall into wanting to explain every little detail to the people who don't know, because somewhere there's some dumb executive who's like, I don't understand. How come they's buying the stuff with the kid thing? And they're like, oh, we better explain it. So it'll be like, Cat, you know that caps are the currency that we use in the wasteland. You're going to need more caps than that.
Hilarious.
You know, that's the kind of stuff you would get in some things, but they never did that in this. So I'm wondering if it came across to you.
I would absolutely agree with you on that. I think they did it. They found a great balance between showing you, again, it's kind of the comment I made earlier about the world building. It does it so subtly as part of the narrative, and it serves to tell the story better. And it's, again, it's very efficient. Mm-hmm. You learn a lot about the world. And just as these characters move through and interact through that world, I thought the series really did a great job of telling me about what's going on. I have a lot of questions like, okay, is it this way in the video games, or know about the vaulties in the video games? Be a secret, but they're not a secret, but I don't know.
Yeah, they're not a secret. The vaults aren't a secret at all in the video games. Everything you saw in that honored the video games to a T. So if you went and played the video game now, you would be like, oh, okay, yeah, this is all, like, they know about the vaults. Now, the video games take place during different, like, this show is after every single video game canon-wise. Like I said, this would be like a new edition of the video game.
Yeah, they're not doing the Star Wars route of like filling in a gap.
Yeah,
or
it's not a prequel at all.
This is just same world, not even many of the characters. There's a couple that exist, but...
Are there any characters that are in the video games at all?
No, there's just places.
Yeah, Shady Sands is a place that exists, and like they're Easter egg characters, like a couple of the suits that are in the war room at the end. Those are names that you encounter in the games.
Right.
But I love that the show did this. I was going to bring this up as a sticking point, but like all the characters that you got introduced to, Scotty, we got introduced to as Fallout fans. Like,
yeah.
There really is no John Halo. There really is no, because Fallout, you pick your character like you would a character creator.
Yeah, you create your character. You get to build them from the you get to build their face.
Yeah.
You get to build exactly what they look like.
And so I think they did the smart thing of saying, here's four people to pick from, you know, find which one is interesting to you, and we'll bounce around to all of them.
I mean,
smart.
As a matter of fact, one of the things that's going on with the fans right now is they're going into that character generator and they're trying to make everybody. So I've already seen Lucy done. Yeah. I've already seen Maximus done. I mean, people are going crazy just trying, because you have so much control, and especially in Fallout 4 and 76, you can totally like move the cheekbones around and everything. So
you can make a tiny little adult child looking Norm character.
Yeah,
the little brother.
So I think we've established, this honors the game very well. So let's talk about the story. Let's talk about the characters we meet here, and then we can talk about like the favorite scenes, favorite events, fights, things like that.
I dig it.
As we said, we got the three main protagonists are Ella. No, I'm sorry. That's right.
You're in love already.
Our Lucy McLean, who's played by Ella Purnell, who's the vault dweller from Vault 33. Mm-hmm. We have Maximus, played by Aaron Motton, who's a squire in the Brotherhood of Steel. And we have the ghoul, who before he got ghoulified was, and I guess still is, Cooper Howard, a famous Hollywood actor played by Walton Goggins. Mm-hmm. Those are our three protagonists that we follow. All of them very much are Fallout characters. You've never been able to play a ghoul, really.
Nope.
But you have been able to play someone in the Brotherhood, and you're almost always someone from a vault.
That's usually the tutorial ground is you start as a vault and then go out into the world, just like our main hero.
So these characters really track with characters in the game. They feel like characters in the game. All of the vaults, when you play these games, all the vaults have their own feel and their own backstory. Mm-hmm. And again, they do this thing with this is like a triangle of vaults. That's the vaults are all interconnected. And to them, to the people in the vaults, that is the way it is. And every time you're in the game, that's always the way it is. That's the buy-in you have to do as someone who plays the multiple versions of these games, is realize that this vault, your vault, is the way it is, even though you've played other games and you know that every vault is some crazy experiment.
Could you make it as a vault dweller?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Okay. Oh, for sure.
Scotty, same question. Could you make it as a vault dweller?
It depends. Which vault am I going to be in?
Well, you don't know any different. That's the thing.
I think that really makes a difference.
Well, I'll say, just for broad strokes, it's not one that's like one of the terminal scary ones. It is, your needs are met, you live in a vault, and that's your nuclear future.
I mean, of all the options that are available, yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. Everything else sucks.
Yeah.
Maximus would agree. Okay.
Maximus would agree.
We were talking about vaulties, and I was curious. Okay.
But just learning about Vault 33 and I really didn't know going into this how much time we'd spend in the vault.
Mm-hmm.
I literally thought it was going to, because in almost every game, this comes with game bias. In almost every game, you have to leave the vault because of some, like, everyone else in the vault is dead for some reason.
Yeah.
There's usually never you can hang around.
It really is. The vault is your tutorial stage to learn how to, like, move your character, interact, open doors, pick up items. And then once you figure out the tutorials and the controls, it's like, okay, go play the game. And it kicks you out of the vault.
Yeah. And there's usually never no going back.
But it is interesting. Like, you do get it in the games, but this, we get a whole almost, it is its own world.
Yeah.
Even, like, within the vault and then within the vaults that are connected.
Yeah.
And then you learn that there's other vaults that are completely different. I mean, it was smart on Bethesda to be like, oh, we'll just make multiple vaults so we can keep writing different stories and say, this is Vault 12. But to actually have context for this and relationships that are spread out across them, it makes it more engaging, I think.
Yeah. Man, I love that in the last episode where they show all the vaults on the North America map, and there's some in Mexico and there's some in Canada. Yeah. I was like, oh. And he goes, we have over 100 vaults. And we're like, yeah, we know you have at least 111, because I think 111 is in one of the games.
It is part of lore.
Yeah. So, and I always wondered, like, are they naming these from one? Because I wasn't sure if they were doing, like, you know, floor naming, where it's like 101, 102, you know, or 201, 301, like that. But apparently, no, they started at one, because there's like a three or four.
Four is the good one.
Yeah.
That's part of the Mach Nation. No, it's crazy. And yeah, how many numbers there are. And we our main character, Lucy, is from Vault 33, and we learn all about, we learn as much as they give us about Vault 33, but even at the end of 8 episodes, we're still like, so what's the deal with the other vaults? Wait, we only know a little bit about the vaults now.
Well, we know that they marry across the vaults, so they don't end up marrying their cousins.
After practicing with your cousins, weird.
Yeah.
During that whole marriage thing,
yep,
and her introduction, it just really gives you her whole perspective on life.
Yeah.
And it did it so quickly. Like, her wedding night, the guy closes the door and you're like, oh no, something bad is about to happen. Mm-hmm. Just goes, okay, let's go.
Okie dokie.
Okie dokie. The best catchphrase ever.
It was such a pleasant little left-hand turn. And it really established her character very, very quickly.
So then it tracked for you when, like, because that's her development, is she get kicked out of tutorial world and she's the vault dweller that goes to the surface to find her dad.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, when the outside world starts giving you perspective of how the rest of the world sees vaulties, that sort of tracks of how they set her up and all that?
Yeah. Totally.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah, they did a good job, too, of being like, she's like, I do gymnastics and Aikido and target shooting. I love how she goes, but I'm not very good. And then she had all bullseyes.
That's great, and that's game logic. That was one point where it almost ruffled my feathers, is because she knows all about the T-60 heavy armor, right?
Yeah.
Because she read the manuals, and, like, that checks out. Vaulties, not much to read. You're going to read all of it.
Yeah. But
it's also, like, it has the potential to be a Mary Sue tool.
Yeah.
To be like, oh yeah, she learned about it in Vault Time. You know, like it really could be like the Matrix. She downloaded it, you know, like.
Yes, but I will say if we just talked for like way too long, 20, 30 minutes or something about how it honors the video game.
True.
And she, of all the characters, she is the player character.
That makes sense.
And you are, if you make a female character, which I always do, because why would you want to look at a guy's butt running around? you are a Mary Sue.
Absolutely.
Or a Gary Sue or whatever they call it. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, you're the PC.
Yep.
So if they are honoring the video game, then, yes, she's going to be way better than you think she should be. But great reasons for it.
Contrasted with Maximus, who is our audience member learning about the world as well, but yeah. Because he doesn't know anything. He was raised as a squire to a knight? That's medieval stuff. What does it do? You got medieval peanut butter in my Adam Punk jam.
No, I mean, that's the Brotherhood of Steel. They have their own ways. They're semi-mystical. This is the West Coast Brotherhood of Steel, which I think we've only had dabbles of getting into because a lot of those games are on the East Coast, and the East Coast Brotherhood of Steel. This is more because I know from playing the games. The East Coast Brotherhood of Steel and the West Coast Brotherhood of Steel are literally two different factions.
They don't get along.
No, they do. They don't. There's the ostensibly they're supposed to because they're supposed to be the remnants of the U.S. military. But I mean, it's been 200 years on now, so
yep.
Stuff has gone to crazy towns. And then a lot of this, like the games happen at different times. So, there's different evolutions of all the things that we see.
I got you.
But
I think Maximus is my most difficult character in here.
Yeah. Why?
He's a gray character. And normally
he's very gray.
We give a big old Pip-Boy thumbs up, a Coop thumbs up. Sorry, we learned Coop is the inspiration for the thumbs up in this one. We normally give gray characters a thumbs up, but something just irks me about his character. Like, he's bad to the bone, and I feel it in my bones, but he has moments, a lot of moments, where they give him, he just doesn't know, like Lucy doesn't know. Like, he's just as naive as a vault dweller. But it's just fascinating because each episode is different and Maximus, like, you think you have Maximus figured out and then he does something, he picks dialogue option C and you're like, what did you do, buddy?
Yeah, that's one of the things, too, about this show. I could almost see the dialogue options because Fallout is one of those role-playing type video games where you can have different endings, and that's what's funny to me is that there's every one of these games has a canon ending, but it doesn't have to end that way. So every player can have a different perspective on what happened. There's like one canon ending, but then sometimes there's two or three other endings.
Depending on your morality choices?
Depending on what you do. So you have like that dialogue tree. So you can pick like, it'll usually have like three or four options. It'll be like the good guy option, the neutral option, the bad guy option, the cuckoo option or whatever.
Yep.
And throughout this show, I could literally almost see sometimes these options pop up for the characters. Like when Maximus is sitting there and Titus is like, it was great. He was freaking where Maximus is there and Titus, the Michael Rapaport, Michael Rapaport is dying, dropping every F-bomb ever. Yeah, it was Michael Rapaport. I think they looked at the dialogue and they're like, who can do lots of F-bombs? It's like we can either get...
Bill Burr's already in Star Wars.
Yeah, we can either get... Yeah, yeah, or we can get Michael Rapaport. We need to get someone who drops a lot of F-bombs.
Right. So that was a pretty hilarious moment.
Yeah.
Because you like, he's in this massive suit of armor. What the hell is going to hurt him? And all of a sudden, he is running like a girl.
Yeah, radiation bear.
a bear that has parts of it falling off, I'd run away too. But you know instantly that it's against code.
I'm assuming like the rad bear is like a boss fight or like a big bad in the game.
Yep, it'll mess you up.
Yeah, that was... You gotta make sure you've got this other weapon at a checkpoint right outside that cave.
Yep. You do a save before you start messing with those bears.
It's game logic and world logic. If you go off wandering, you might encounter something you're not prepared for.
Yeah. But I could see Maximus's dialogue options. It was like, give him the stim pack. You know, wait, you know, it's like I could
threaten
see,
him. Yeah.
Threaten him. Yeah. I could see all shoot him in the head. This probably would have been one of the options. But I see what you're saying there. To you, was that a bad to the bone moment? Because I didn't see that as a bad to the bone moment. I saw that as a someone who's been victimized his whole life.
Yes.
Finally breaking.
Yes.
But to me, that's not bad to the bone. To me, he's like kind of a victim.
He doesn't know any better because he pulled the Indiana Jones. He survived the nuclear fallout in a lead-lined fridge.
Yeah.
Props to Maximus. Only Indiana Jones could do that, and now there's two.
Mm-hmm.
It makes sense, but it's just weird that it happened twice. but, like, and it all checks out. It's sort of a Thanos is the easy placeholder name, but it is the no choice is really wrong because his knight that he's following ran away, which is against code. You don't show cowardice, you know. Jester's red tape that said Maximus could have become the knight in his stead after ceremonies and blah, 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 you know, but he took it upon himself, evil character choice, took it upon himself to like, oh, this is going to happen. I'm just going to make it happen.
Yeah, right.
So that's where I see a little bit of the bat of the bone.
Right.
But it is like he's acting according to regulations of the Brotherhood, so it's still right. But it's that dichotomy that's breaking for him learning about the world, and I just don't know which way he's going to wind up on it.
Right. And I think that's what makes his character so dynamic.
Yeah.
I like his character. I think it's really, it's going to be interesting to see which way he's getting pulled in so many directions.
That's it. Like he falls in love with Lucy, but is it a Chainsaw Man thing where he's just a horn dog and he's learning about, you know, life and biology for the first time in a couple scenes.
I didn't even know how, oh my gosh. Like a pimple gets really, and then explodes. I was like, oh my gosh. And of course, she knows all about it because the whole point of the vault, or at least her vault, was to propagate the American.
Because of her cousin?
So it wasn't because of her cousin. It's because they're taught. She mentioned a bunch of times that the whole point of their vault is to repopulate the world.
Yes.
Okay. So if you're going to repopulate the world, you're going to have to teach your kids how to do that. So that's why she's so comfortable with
that, but yet I figured it out.
So, yeah.
And that is the weird fallout nature of it is they did practice on cousin, but they were still smart enough to, you know, make it official with somebody else from a different vault.
That's very Fallout, too. This
So this is one of the things that kind of bumped me.
Go for it.
Like it was trying to normalize incest?
No, it's not normalizing anything. It's Fallout. Fallout is gory, silly, scary, it can be crazy sometimes, fantastical.
Very satirical.
Satirical. It's all those things. And that fell right into Fallout stuff. That kind of thing is the thing that if you go into an empty vault that had been broken into by raiders and you're reading the emails and stuff, you could easily see a line in there where they talked about, it really stinks that I'm related to everyone in this vault now. We got to get out of here. You know, it would allude to that kind of stuff. So that's a very Fallout thing.
And it shows like it's the scientist of Fallout as well to say like, here's the issue that would come up in any conversation about the end of the world. Okay, you're in charge with repopulating the Earth. You know, inbreeding is going to be an issue. Right. Mm-hmm. But scientists have planned out these vaults and they've come up with the perfect solution. No solution in Fallout is perfect. So, like, this is the best that they come up with, but, you know.
Yeah.
There's a scientific explanation to it, but it is sort of, oh, end of the world, weird. Okay.
Yeah. It was very Fallout. So, they're not trying to make anything. And it wasn't okay with her. That's why she volunteered herself to be married to someone else from the other vault.
The Raiders. Oh, wait, no.
Yeah. Turned out to be the Raiders.
I don't know. Bumped me a little bit.
Yeah. Play the game. It's par for the course, kind of.
What bumped you more? Her maybe having to practice with kissing cousins or cutting off a head to take a head as a MacGuffin with a chip in it to an evil dystopian desert war lady?
I didn't like that moment at all.
Fair enough.
Because it is one of her baby steps that she takes along the way to becoming something very different than what she was, which is, that's what the whole thing's about.
Yep.
And it was one of those tiny increments of, well, okay, okie dokie.
Okie dokie.
That she has. And I'm, it's not a secret, I'm sure, by now. She was my favorite character. She's, she was kind of the main perspective through which you're experiencing the story. I thought that cutting off the head moment, again, you're like, no, why did you have to take that pill? You could walk. You don't have to make her carry your head.
Tastes like bananas. I don't know why it wasn't more popular.
Cyanide that tastes like bananas?
Yeah.
I guess it beats the almond taste. Is that what they used to say?
So I don't know. If that's so Fallout too, man.
Yep. And I'm with you. That is a giant leap because that is a very graphic, intense thing. But I mean, I guess the slogan for this episode could be "That's Fallout." You know, with the hands up, like "Oh, you." But
a little vault boy.
That's what's interesting Fallout. Is that I can justify this right now because we actually just justified it in the conversation a little bit earlier. In that, when faced with unusual circumstances, her catchphrase is "Okie dokie." That includes sex, that includes violence, that includes being out in a world that says you shouldn't be out here. You know, she looks at it and she always says okie dokie. So, yes, that's an extreme measure, but I don't think it's actually out of character for her. Like, yes, she's a simple little girl with the biggest eyes I've ever seen, but she knows about T-60s, you know? She knows how to take care of rad sickness, so.
Yeah.
But I get it. It was like, oh, we're doing this now. And that's why I was asking earlier, like, the gore of the show is a little unexpected. And that was one of the moments. So I'm like, it makes sense, but wow, okay.
Speaking of gore, Walton Goggins is the ghoul.
Woo-hoo.
That like, the hole in the head, the no nose, that, like, bugged me because I think it's grody. But
that word bugs me, but continue.
But Walton Goggins is so good. I looked forward to every scene, either as him in the past as Cooper Howard,
there you go,
or him as the ghoul in the current timeline that you're watching. He just leapt off the screen. You couldn't take your eyes off of what was going on when he was. It was just great. It's so good.
Leading man charisma all day long.
Yeah, and the whole, like, old West. He was a star of Western film and stage and screen, and he just rolled right into that, and now he's like the man, the ghoul with no name.
Yeah,
that first scene where he was like, "You go after the chicken," and just this was great.
Fuerte y formal. No, that's the other line, but no, yeah, like I do love that he's our flashback, our sort of into let's go back and Tarantino and explain it a little bit as we're going along. And he shines in both roles, like, with a nose or without a nose, like, he works both characters. And you forget, like, not really forget, but it's fascinating that, you know, we see that he's a good guy, and then immediately we get a smash cut to him all disfigured as quote-unquote bad guy.
Yeah.
But there's never a disconnect, you know? It's like, oh, yeah, Coop. Maybe when we first see the ghoul on the screen, you're like, oh, he's creepy looking. But once they start to put the scenes back-to-back, you're like, oh, he's still the same dude, but what happened in the middle?
Yeah.
What's the missing piece that you, like, refuse to give me?
200 years. I mean, and that's another thing honoring the game. I mean, ghouls can live forever, and they can be, what do you want to call it? Not sentient, I guess? I mean, I guess they're kind of sentient even when they're feral, but
non-feral,
non-feral, if they can take the right drugs.
There you go.
And that's in the game. You run into non-feral ghouls who are able to keep themselves not feral.
And spoiler alert,
and
I mean,
so many feral ghouls. So you run into so many feral ghouls. That's like the number one thing you fight.
It's the best. Yeah. And we get to run into a bunch of ghouls in the show, which is great because we get the nice little beat of them saying their names to try and retain their humanity.
Yeah.
But also, like, I didn't see this coming, but Johnny Pemberton, shout out to the best side character, he gets turned into a ghoul.
Or does he?
Or does he?
Yeah.
They never really explain it, but if he did, they never really explain that he did either. Like, it's just like, yeah, this could have happened because you were bamboozled by a snake oil salesman.
Snake oil salesman, the guy was great. There's a lot of debate in fandom right now. That's another mystery that needs to be solved in season two, there is a number of things in the game that could give you the effect that he got. The instant healing and the not being able to be killed with an arrow through your neck.
So I had that thought. There are things that do that, but aren't they temporary, like an hour's worth kind of thing?
Right. There's temporary things. There's also ghoulification, but there's also something that I really hope that they do, super mutant serum.
Oh, yes.
Super mutant serum could do that to somebody.
That is a thing we haven't seen in the
show
yet.
We have not seen any super mutants yet.
I think they hinted at them a few times. It's either super mutants or Deathclaws, but we're getting one of them.
Well, we got the Deathclaw skull at the very end.
That's true.
Which was awesome.
But they're like with all the vault experiments that they hint at, one of them could be where we get super mutants.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
I think y'all are a bunch of nerds about this.
But that's the best part. Because, like, it works for the show, too. It's here's the nerdy game thing. The Fallout series is popular because they have NPCs, non-player characters. Bethesda is great with just the characters they put in there because they gave them so much, like, context and history that's unnecessary. But you'll end up talking to a shop teller and they'll give you their whole backstory. So we meet a whole bunch of these in this show. Like, Scotty, what'd you think about the guy that had a whole house for his farm trying to fix his water pump? And he's wearing nothing but a diaper. Like, what? How do you make sense of that guy?
I couldn't get it. I'm watching that scene and I'm like, with it. And I was like, it's his arms. His arms are too long. And I'm like, no, it's not that his arms are too. It's his torso is too.
And but that's
really
it.
Creepy.
And, like, the show is full of them, which makes me so happy. But, like, it's just those NPCs. She encounters a character. He's like, oh, yeah, the city's over there. I ain't never been over there. It's like, it's 500 feet away, dude. He's like, now I live on this farm. You want to marry me? This could all be yours. And then she leaves, and he just goes back to living in the sand. Like, video game logic. How does that guy survive? He just does.
I keep putting sand in it, and sand just keeps coming out. Did you ever try water? You got water?
If somebody hands you water, you drink it.
Oh my gosh. I can see that dialogue box too. Give him a sip of your water, and then he drinks all your water.
He's all your water.
And then your inventory goes down, and the game's like, well, you're down one water. It's like, okay.
And totally deviled eggs.
Yeah, yeah. They're
deviled eggs in the game.
Yep. Yep.
Because, like, all those display cases, you can fill me in on this because. The setting for this, the game, I mean, the show looks just like the game.
Looks just like it.
Like they ripped the resources and just printed them out full size and put them up.
Did you know that the bobbleheads that you see are literally bobbleheads from the merch store that already existed? They didn't make those. They didn't make those for the show.
That's cost efficient.
They just went to the local comic store and got some Fallout bobbleheads and just put them there. Because those in the game, Scott, those are the collectibles, the bobbleheads.
But that's the thing I was going to say is, like, the bobbleheads are in display cases, and display cases are, like, the main way you see stuff in the game for inventory, but they still kept it in the world. Like, did anything look too set up or, like, just... Like, I mean, yes, it looks weird because it's dystopia, but, like, it's just so funny how they kept everything functional in real life, even though it's really just, like, it was set up that way to function in game, you know?
Yeah.
Like, the hallways are narrow, and this only has two doors, and it's like, that doesn't really need to be that way in real life, but okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I had one of those moments in a fight. In fact, it was one of my... I'd go and call it one of my favorite fight scenes.
Oh, yeah, let's do favorite fight scenes. Go.
It had a real video game mechanic to it. It was the first time the Maximus fights the ghoul, Coop.
Mm-hmm.
And first off, the sound design around Coop's guns are so much fun. And I find myself wanting to know more about what are those bullets in his bandolier? What are those? Those got to do something crazy.
Could be anything. Yep.
They were so. Old West of its time, which is how we know and love Walton Goggins. But the way he's up on that second level and he's firing down at you. I mean, and then he has to shoot the bridge out and he falls down. I was like, that's a boss fight in a video game.
Absolutely.
You never can defeat the boss until you shoot the bridge out.
So, okay, yeah, you saw the boss phases. That was absolutely true because the heavy armor can't go up wooden stairs.
Yeah.
But that's funny. Like, that's real world logic, but also, yeah, video game rules. Mm-hmm. That was an awesome fight, definitely, for sure. And you mentioned his gun sound effects. I can't imagine the job they had because in Fallout, and they show it too, like, guns are sort of what you make them, which is fascinating. So, like, even though Goggins is carrying a gun and Lucy gets a gun, some of them shoot syringes and some of them shoot explosive, you know, exploding shots. Like, who knows what's coming out of what arsenal? So
yeah, you can upgrade them and all kinds of stuff in the game. You can do all kinds of stuff to your guns.
There you go.
What was your favorite fight scene, Mikey? Do you have one?
My favorite fight scene, it's less of a fight, but I do like the showdown between Goggins. He goes as a ghoul. He goes out on a job where he has to confront, I guess, one of his workers or somebody that's in his pay. So it is a very Clint Eastwood old Western movie, and he's having a showdown with some farmer, and he's like, "I have your wife," and he makes him think that he's eating his daughter, you know, but his daughter's right there.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's a Mexican standoff. It's like, we're going to have some dialogue options, and it's going to be real tense, and we're going to pick dialogue option C for a bunch of it, so you don't really know what's going on. But then it's a bloodbath at the end.
Yeah.
And the teenage boy has to become the man of the family, and like, so much happens in just this little sort of... It's similar to the opening scene of Inglourious Bastards with Christoph Waltz.
Oh, yeah,
it's just like this little tense moment, and you're like, this is all dialogue, but I'm scared. What's going to happen? And then because it's Fallout, stuff explodes. But
yeah,
no, that was probably, as far as like action intense, that was one of the limits that was up there for me. What about you?
Oh, it's the ultimate ending finale fight scene where you have all the Brotherhood coming in to the... Well, the last vestiges of the New California Republic.
That's
and
it?
Just in the, you got basically raiders, I guess. They dress like raiders, but they're not really raiders. But you got them fighting the power armor. And they can get the best of them. And that's, I mean, amazing. Seeing, and how they do it in slow-mo, like I said, it's bold. But there's so much action, so much going on. But it's going on in slow-mo. You get to see all of it.
And you get to see actually how the Raiders actually stand a chance, because you would think heavy armor, oh, it's done.
No,
but
no.
But not necessarily the case. They're Raiders and survivors for a reason. Yeah.
And then there's one little bit that's part of that, like tangential to that, which is kind of like your thing that really isn't a fight scene but has fighting involved.
Mm-hmm.
I love it when Coop is he's like, I used to wear armor like that. There was a, you know, he talks about the weld, the weakness in the weld that he complained about to the guy as a total callback.
That's
and then
it.
He shoots it and then it totally takes out the guy. And he's like, nope, didn't fix that.
Yeah. Did they ever fix that prop? That's so good old boy cowboy. It's the best.
Yeah. That scene also exemplified how comfortable the ghoul is in the wasteland. He's been there so long.
Oh, for sure.
He's real comfortable. And that's the real difference. Like, Lucy is very uncomfortable because she's fish out of water.
Mm-hmm.
Even though Maximus is a wastelander and grew up in the wasteland, he's uncomfortable because he's out of
the safety of the Brotherhood.
The safety of the Brotherhood. His comfort zone in the Brotherhood. Even he had the head cleric was like, you will be my sword, and we will take the Brotherhood over.
Which is what he wanted, but now he's like, I don't know if I want that anymore.
But the ghoul is just like, where's my family? That's all I care about. That's all I've been doing. Is that what he's been doing for 200 years, looking for his family? Or has he been buried? How long has he been buried down there underground, too? That's what you wonder about.
We did see him bury himself, like, on purpose. Like, he had the little, well, I guess it wasn't on purpose, but he was buried with the life support.
Yeah, well, he didn't bury himself.
Okay.
I watched that twice.
I thought he did.
I watched it twice.
Fair enough.
Three times, actually, I think. And the guys who dig him up, they say that there's a mafia boss who keeps him there and keeps him alive under there and digs him up every once in a while.
That means he's indebted to somebody.
And makes him, like, I probably do something, I guess.
It was probably the source for his serum.
So
that was the reason he kept alive, is doing jobs for some
drug
runner.
Exactly. I think he was the pet of some...
The guy he met, yeah.
They say his name, like Don something, or I forget what they say his name. It's a real throwaway thing.
Yeah, that, I think it's actually the guy he goes meets later in the episode.
So, later in this show. But that's the thing, and then they're digging him up because they want to get the bounty on the scientist guy and his dog.
But, okay, dumb question time. So the big reveal for Coop happens at the end. He's like, where's my family?
Yeah.
Do we know that's his motivation, or that's revealed for the audience, too, at that point?
At that point, yes.
That they're still alive, because we're sort of led to believe that,
at least he thinks so. And when Norm, we haven't even talked about what's going on with Norm.
He's creepy in the shadows.
We could do 3 hours on this show. When Norm goes into Vault 31?
Yep. Yeah.
When he goes into Vault 31...
And
he finds Bud's buds all in the cryo sleep, which is in the game. Everything's in the game. They don't make anything new because the game is so. I paused that screen when he's looking at the screen and it has listed everyone who's frozen in there still and the people who are out. And I couldn't. It was too blurry for me. I couldn't see, but I was trying to see if his wife's name was in there.
Probably why they blurred it, just to thwart you.
Well, it might have been in there. Her name is Barb Howard, and I wonder if they didn't put, like, Barbara maiden name something.
Yeah.
Because they might have got a divorce. Who knows what happened?
That's you know? It made it seem like that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it might not even have been recognizable.
I mean,
or might have said B something. Who knows?
I'm just glad for as many answers as we didn't get. I'm glad Coop got that resolution at the end to be like, oh, we know, we get why he's doing it. And it makes so much sense. And mm-hmm. he's still a good guy, even though he looks weird. Mm-hmm. He's just searching for his family.
Yeah.
But he also gets the fallout line of war never changes.
Yeah.
Because he's the good old cowboy. Mm-hmm. And he knows the rules. Mm-hmm. Thou shall be beset by side quests at all turns.
Yeah.
But...
But it was such a Fallout reveal. Here's the full spoiler on this, that all Lucy goes through all this stuff, finally gets... one thing we don't know is how in the heck is Moldaver still alive?
Yep.
We don't know what happened there.
She's not a ghoul. She's got all her noses and parts.
Yeah, 200 years old. It was so... This was the most Fallout-y of the Fallout, because this is the end part where you get the final person you're after. You have all the dialogue tree options going on. Your mom is there, a tied-up feral ghoul. You start remembering what happened. You remember Moldaver. Your dad's in a giant bird cage. And
that's a damn fine cage.
And you got the villain monologuing to you and the dad saying don't listen to her and you have to decide what to do, and then Maximus shows up and lets your dad out on you, and it's like let him stop, and you know, and even when she like takes her mom out with that mercy thing, that's a freaking dialogue choice right there.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, it was just so much going on. But that whole reveal that her dad was behind everything, and everyone at 31 is buds, and they just get sent over to the other two vaults because they're management that Norm uncovers.
Every time the curtain gets pulled back, there's another curtain behind it, and then that gets pulled back, and it's something even weirder, and it goes even deeper.
And Bud's a brain and a little robot, which is, again, that's something that's in Fallout. You fight those robot brain things all the time in 76.
The Uber future management, the future managers.
Oh, man. It's just great. And just the ending tag, New Vegas.
Yeah. Because that's, you were saying, this show is based off the game.
Is that a thing from the games?
That's a whole game is called Fallout New Vegas. That's technically, it'd be four. No, it'd be 3.5.
3.5.
Something like that. It came between, wait, or did it come before 3? I don't know what the timeline is.
I forget
what came out when.
But like Kevin was saying, the show for taking place directly after New Vegas, which is a game, like it's still part of the world. Like the game didn't get rid of it. It wasn't a thing that existed purely for the game. So it just shows that there's more resources that they can pull from, that they're going to be bringing it in and doing it in the way they did this season. Like it's all new for everything we already know about it.
It's all new. And let's address some of our, this has generally gotten good reviews by everybody that I've seen so far, but let's address some of the stuff that Toxic Fandom tried to pull up.
There you go.
One of the things they try to pull up is Shady Sands, wait, Shade of Sands shouldn't be destroyed. In the timeline, it doesn't follow with the games and the New Vegas and the this and the, and there's a thing on the board and it says Fall of Shady Sands, and they started freaking out. So IGN wonderfully went to Todd Howard and asked him, like, everyone's going crazy over this. When they literally said, does the Fall of Shady Sands, is that a separate event from it blowing up? And he goes, most certainly. So they were, that's, calm down. They know exactly what they're doing. They're cutting the timeline close, but it's, and then the other thing is they tried to pull the, like, you're making another Mary Sue female character.
Yep. I almost complained about it.
Was there already a female character in the world?
Just generally in media, a Mary Sue female character. You're making another Ray. You're making another this, that, the other thing. But again, this is this. If you were playing this game and you picked a female character, that female character would be Lucy.
Oh, for sure.
Because you'd be playing a vault dweller, and you'd know way too much, and you'd be able to do way too much because it's a video game.
Yeah.
I just saw her as, since I always play female characters in games because, I'm sorry, this isn't very feminist. It's literally, I don't want to watch a dude's butt walk around all the whole game.
You said you liked my butt.
I really just think you're compensating, man. So, I mean, maybe there's something that maybe you want to talk to us about. Maybe there's some.
Okay, well, you saw how Ella Purnell looks in a vault suit. So
careful, she's watching you. She's watching everybody. Yeah. But I will say, and this is the fun part about it, because we do get the nerd cop out of saying, well, it's video game rules. And normally that would be a cop-out because video game rules are kind of janky. But what the show is doing is it's wonderfully incorporating those video game rules in a way that shows we understand them. We understand the story that we're pulling from. We know the timeline. It may get a little weird, may get a little janky, but we are applying logic and care to this, you know? And so, like, when you play the video game, you're the main character. You're going to be a little bit better than everybody else. You're not going to be the NPC.
Right.
It's like you're saying. Like, you got to be the main star a little bit. So,
video
game rules. Deal with it.
Yep. Deal with
it. There's your positron spin.
Yes. Love it.
All right. I smell a pizza, Mikey.
Yeah, let's go. Ding dong. Pizza is here.
When our pizza's here, it means it's the end of the podcast. But when we're doing an assumption like we're doing now, that means we give a pizza rating. Our pizza rating is the most arbitrary rating in the world, but we love it. Out of 8 slices of pizza, 8 being the best, 1 being the worst, we can add or subtract toppings, we can put sides, we can do all kinds of stuff to goose or detract. We can have even delivery methods, all kinds of things.
That's
so,
it, I would like to know, Scotty, I'm going to make you go first. Yeah. As the non-video game player, as the sort of Fallout newbie, the vaulty, as it were, I'm going to make you go first on the pizza ratings.
No, happy to go. Happy to give this a Super 8 slices. I think I'm going to give it a Supreme Pizza again.
Oh, yeah.
I love it. It was so much fun to watch. I don't feel like I missed anything not having played the game.
Oh,
again,
that's good.
Easter eggs, I'm sure there's a bunch of Easter eggs in every other scene. But I was highly entertained. We're all a fan of good storytelling.
Yeah.
And I think this was storytelling done very well in a visually striking world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
From the grotesque hits to the slowdown fight scenes, you know, to the satire that it is all. I don't know. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I'm gonna have to make Lady Notscott get into it.
I love it.
So she's I think she'd love it. So anyway, 8 slices, big thumbs up. Enjoyed it.
I love it. And one hypothetical for you, though. So the sequel to this season is only in video game form, and you only get to play one of the main 3 characters. Which one would you play as? Which one would you want to follow most?
Lucy.
Okay.
Yeah.
You did say she was your favorite, so I kind of knew
favorite.
That. But
yeah.
Koopa number two.
There is literally a video on YouTube right now, Scott, just so you know, that has 162 Easter eggs in the Fallout series.
And that's just that that's the ones they found in the first 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's a list of 162 Easter eggs. Jeez. So, yeah, you missed a lot of Easter eggs.
Nerds.
Nerds. All right, Mikey, we got an 8 from the Vaulty over there.
Yeah, yeah.
Vaulty's, I think we should use Vaulty instead of newbie now.
Yeah, yeah. Vaulty, yeah. Oh, you're so fresh and blue. I love it. You just learned how to walk and pick up objects. For me, this is absolutely another 8 slice. I mean, the hype was unreal for this, and it still delivered. Mm-hmm. So, accomplishment there. I was debating whether to take a slice off for Maximus, but I was thinking about it wrong. I got to have the positron spin in that he's frustrating to me as a character.
Uh-huh.
But because of that, I want to watch and find out what uh-huh. happens to him, yeah. even though they're probably going to make it the way I don't want it to happen. I am now super curious to find out. But also, this comes from a little bit of knowing the game bias. Is like, it's very cool that we got to see everything. It's very cool how lovingly they did it. But I've been the old grumpy, I don't like origin stories person on the podcast before. And this is origin story. This is, hey, this is Fallout. And I love it. And it's so cool that they're doing it wonderfully and we get it. But I still have more questions. And they only like 2 of them got answered.
Mm.
And now I have to wait probably about 2 years for part 2. That makes me grumpy, but not enough to take away slices. So it's a stellar work. I love shouting Evil Ted at every scene, but my topping will be Rad Roach topping. I'll get Rad Sickness for a little bit, but it'll be Rad Roach topping because the wait for this is going to be just torture.
That's the weirdest. I love it.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. All right. Like I said, Fallout's one of my favorite games ever, and I was very worried about this going in and that it would get ruined and I would be disappointed. I was wonderfully surprised. This right here is 8 slices to me, all the toppings, an app, and a dessert at an overhyped restaurant that I go to being like, how good is this restaurant going to be? And people are saying this is good. I don't think it's going to be good. I've been disappointed by restaurants before that are supposed to be good.
You were ready to not like it, weren't you?
Yes, I was ready to not like it. I'm like, this, whatever. Yeah, okay. Who runs this restaurant? Is this like a Guy Fieri restaurant? It's going to be flavor what? But then I go there, and the wait staff is great. The chef comes out and sees how we're doing, and everything's wonderful, top to bottom.
Yeah.
So this is 8 slices at a surprisingly good restaurant with an app and a dessert.
I love it. They probably had entertainment, maybe some music playing, yes. Live music.
This was above and beyond expectations. I love when the nerds are able to take control of things and do it the right way.
Oh, I agree on that. They crushed it on this one.
Yes.
I'm only mad because I want more of it. It was so good.
All right. You know what we think. We loved it. We want to know what you guys think. Even if it's negative, you can criticize in a positive way.
Yeah.
Let us know. You can hit us up on all the social medias at AssumingPod. You can also Gmail us, assumingpositions@gmail.com. Mikey, how do you want them to format that Gmail?
This one is too easy because I smiled from ear to ear when I saw it, but change this will be for both of us. We'll both have to do it, but it'll be great. Change your monitor settings to be only monochrome green.
Yeah.
Old monospace type, like the consoles that are in the game and in the show.
Yeah.
And click through those. Type it on an old keyboard to yes. make the clicky-clack and send me an old Apple II-style email.
Yes. Right
but
on.
You love the clicky-clack keyboard, though, don't you, Mike?
Yeah.
It's a nerd sound. It's like raindrops. It's awesome.
That's one thing, too. I'll tell you this one Easter egg, Scott, that you wouldn't have recognized because you didn't play the game that got me going crazy. When Norm is at the overseer's yes. desk and he's hacking into her computer, the screen that's up is the exact same screen that you use when you're hacking into a computer. It's the exact
really?
Same.
The one printed out, it was his mom?
Yep. It was the exact same screen. It even had like attempts up at the top because you have a certain number of attempts. It was crazy. Anyway.
No, it's so good.
We obviously love this thing. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you like what we do here and want to support us, podcasting is not free. You can go to buymeacoffee.com/assumingpod and throw some caps into our cap jar.
We need some Nuka-Cola coffee.
Yeah. We want to thank you guys so much for listening. You're the best positrons that ever were. We also want to thank That Guy Brad for doing our announcing, Not Scott Productions for our equipment and being our producer. Thanks for joining us.
Good
again,
to be
Scott.
With you.
And Jazzar for our music. And we hope you guys have a great rest of your week in the wasteland. I just want to add, listen to some of that music. The Fallout music is the best. They kept the music from the game in this. So good. Yeah.
That's fantastic, Mikey. Holy crap. Do more of that.
Keep your thumbs up. But if your thumb is bigger than the cloud, start running.
Bye.